Hi, I'm Anastasia Bussis. I am a two-time Olympic speed skater. My whole life, I have been surrounded by athletes, and every one of them has a story that a scoreboard will never capture.
It's not an easy thing to be with an athlete.
I don't understand why they're making fun of me because I like to figure skate.
Player's Own Voice is all about the person inside the performance.
When you're so in it, I think perhaps we're the people that understand it the least.
Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
So I'm the main beaver leader for our beaver scouts. We had been doing zero in person. We had done only via Zoom. We have been allowed to meet in person and had been encouraged to do so. So we were like, okay, we're going to do this outdoor thing. And so all kids came.
Okay.
Just before I came on the call with you, I got an email today from one of the other leaders that she had a confirmed COVID test yesterday. And I'm like, oh my God, what the one time we do anything, you know?
One time, yeah, how disappointing.
Like everybody else was like, oh, we're so excited, we want to get together. And I'm like, okay, we'll do this outdoor thing. And now we're like,
cautiously, right, right.
<What'd you guess? laughs> Oh. So I don't know, you know?
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. This is a real-life therapy session between myself and a client that we're calling Patty. You might recognize Patty because she showed up in previous seasons of this show. And the reason that Patty and I started working together is really different than why we're working together now. Started around a crisis that had to do with a traumatic birth, and through the working out of our relationship, we've navigated the ups and downs of so many things that have happened in her life. So Patty and I at this stage in our therapy are doing what I might call maintenance work. What you're about to hear is Patty and I explore her inner conflict. As there's been this incident that's happened around the COVID exposure, she's had an emotional reaction, and we're making a little space to figure out what feels so complicated inside of her.
It's like, okay, emailed that person back, was like, has public health told you that we need to let beavers know because... you know, we should, and then we should put in-person stuff on hold. And then I'm like, I had to take a breath to be like, I want to respond in a kind way, seeing how she's doing, caring for her emotional stuff. And then I need to like figure out my own to-do list as a result of this.
Oh, so this is, you started by saying that it's hard when there are these things that pop up that take a lot of energy from you when your plate is already so full, as you're saying that.
I feel like
your eyes get, yeah, can you put words to that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel a little bit guilty because I'm like,
yeah,
I feel a little bit like on the one hand, it's good, it's a good sign. My body's telling me you can only take so much. Uh-huh. And then this perfectionist part of me probably is like,
okay,
I can do it. Mm-hmm. Or I should be able to do something. I don't know.
Oh, so the perfectionism. Mm. Yeah, the perfectionist, if we personify it.
Right.
It's making an appearance here as you are, it sounds like, really tuning in to what your limits and your boundaries are.
Right.
And my instinct, I think part of why I wanted to go after this a little bit in you and was curious is because it feels so important that your boundary is emerging from the inside, that you have it's like a squeaky voice, like it's new and you're learning to use it and you're learning to sense it and saying like, this feels like it's too much and I don't want to do it. And yet I can see why that voice might have had a hard time emerging over time if the perfectionism came in and made you feel guilty about having a boundary or a limit.
Right.
Tell me about what it feels like to have the perfectionist around.
I mean, on the one hand, I know that it helped that I do good things, that I can do some good work. And then on the other hand, I'm like, it feels exhausting.
Hmm.
And I was going to say something trite, like, nobody understands how hard it is for me or whatever. Or like, how do people just so easily be like, nope, can't do that. Or like just have different expectations for myself or for the thing I'm doing.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you've mentioned it's exhausting. And then, I mean, I think you said something really important. Like nobody understands how hard it is for me. And you laughed it off. Like you aren't allowed to say that, or maybe you know better or something like that. But I'm wondering how it would be to actually say the thing that's underneath that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just carrying so much. Yeah.
Right.
And that I think both my own expectations and other people's because of who I am and just patterns means that is sort of established, right? And so, yeah, it's hard to set boundaries both for myself and when I'm trying to communicate to other people that like I can't do it all.
Do you have a sense of how old the perfectionist is? Hmm. Like when she showed up?
Yeah, that's a hard question. But I would say probably somewhere within elementary school that knowing that I could do a good job, that people had high expectations, that I wanted to do a good job was important to me pretty early on.
How did you know it was important to you? What did it feel like when you could have that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of paradox in the sense of it was a way that I could be seen, even though it was a little bit of a sore spot in terms of my family context, right? Like,
when we're talking about perfectionism, we're talking about this drive inside for everything to be right, and the sense that there is this standard that a person is held to or holds themselves to, where anything less than the ideal is not good enough. And usually what happens alongside perfectionism is this internalization of shame and blame, like the inability to meet the target, the perfect goalpost, the expectation. It comes with this sense of feeling like a failure, not just in behavior, but as a person. There are lots of different ways of understanding how perfectionism originates, but one of the ones that I've been thinking about and working with lately is this idea that perfectionism is a trauma response in a way. It's a way to earn love when perhaps we didn't have that love deeply internalized inside of us, because it feels so good to get the affection and affirmation from other people and even from ourselves when we do things that are right or ideal. The problem, this pursuit of perfectionism gets in the way of our ability to live and to see what is already beautiful and good about us.
You know, good job, but also let's not make this a big deal because your sister's... I think for me in my family context, it was simultaneously, oh, thank God, you're great and we don't have to worry about you.
Yeah.
And so there's that message. And then please don't ever change this mode because we can't handle it. We couldn't handle it if that changed.
And I saw you chuckle when you said that, but my heart sunk. Mm. Like, what a trap to be in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually what came to my mind just now was the summer going into grade 12. I have Graves' disease, which was a hypothyroid issue. Mm-hmm. And so it sort of like went off the deep end and things kind of did fall apart. Like I was struggling in school and it was the hardest year because it was the biggest point of tension in terms of me and my parents of the, like, I understand that they're behind the question was care and concern, but the question was, what is wrong with you? Like, what is wrong with you that you aren't doing what you're supposed that you have done so well before, doing everything just fine. And what I heard in that was, that's not okay. You know, instead of, you need to, let me come alongside you. Let's figure this out together. You know, what? Mm-hmm. How can I help you? And so that's a point, actually.
Do you have a sense if we were to talk to your grade 12 self, what she would say about what it's like for her to have heard that? To have heard first the, like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, I think she felt a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. Yeah, couldn't articulate it in a way that actually elicited support or help, or so very helpless. Hmm. Yeah.
There's that stuckness of the perfectionism around that time. I can imagine the helplessness and the shame was remedied by, okay, tighten everything up, be perfect,
right.
Show up. Like, I can really see how the perfectionism came in again.
Right. Yeah. Because once everything's normalized and the, like, medical stuff was all under control, then I could manage more. I could go back to regular scheduled programming of on our own.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that time of needing more help, needing more support didn't go well. If we were to like measure that success of trying that on for size.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
What a missed opportunity for you. I mean, you might feel a little bit irritated or angry, like you got dropped.
Yeah.
You really needed to hear from the people, from the adults in your life, exactly what you just described, getting closer, stepping up, and probably in there too, it is so okay for this to be messy. You have so much that you are carrying and dealing with. You have all the space in the world, honey. Your experience of being human is wide enough to include all of your pain and all of the not knowing and the figuring out what's happening in your body and your brilliance and your intellect and your caring, and it all gets to exist inside of you. I'm seeing your tears.
That would have felt really good at the time.
Yeah. I'm wondering if these are the tears of the grade 12 you or the adult you.
When you used the word, you know, to call me honey was really, it felt really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that spoke to younger me for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Younger you has lots of tears that need to be cried.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what else she longs to hear.
That things being messy doesn't mean that she is not amazing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
How would it be to offer that to her? Oh, and I'm seeing your tears come up again here. Let's just leave lots of room for those tears. Oh, okay. You feel me with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a risk that I took in using like a kind of affectionate name with her, because I don't do that very often. I don't do that really at all. And I haven't done that with her. But there was something about her sense of vulnerability as this teen who was suffering and confused and needed somebody to parent her. It felt like a risk I wanted to take to nurture her in that way, in a very maternal way, something that was missing at that time.
I simultaneously felt soothed and some sadness in terms of how you were so easily able to do that for me, to both speak words of comfort and step up in terms of like, I got this, I got you, I got this, I got you. And I've seen you. Like, I simultaneously love that, that we can do that, that you can do that for me. And I also had this glimmer of like, God damn it, she's going to be a great mom. Mm-hmm. And then I also was like, but then why was that so hard? Why?
You were always deserving of the care that you offer other people. That has always been exactly for you. You looked away at one moment as I was talking, and it made me wonder if it felt like a bit much or like, yeah.
Yes, you
know. Yes.
Okay. I sometimes have a hard time hearing and accepting. We will need to still work on this. It made me think actually of one of our conversations from the podcast, and you said this thing, it's like 3 years ago now or something like that. It's like, you know, you're worth, even if you were, you know, nothing had been packed for the beach and you were lying on the floor rolling around or some kind of like comment, even if you were like lying on the floor, sprawled out, you know, nothing done, that you still have just as much worth. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, I still have this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure. Like,
yeah,
I'm not sure. And I'm not sure
the
people in my life also would articulate that. Like, there would be some nuance probably.
Yeah. Like, you're not sure if it could be that your worth could be that unconditional. Yeah. Like, surely there has to be some conditions on it.
Right.
Okay. Right. So let's, I'm wondering if there's a part inside of you that really longs to hear just how valuable you are and has been waiting. Maybe it's grade 12 you. I'm really wanting to know that I'm good enough part. If she could just come to the front, if she could take in what's happening between us right now. Maybe letting the part of you that isn't quite sure, skeptical, kind of letting that take a break for a moment. What's that like inside?
Like almost dysregulated in this like giddy kind of.
Oh.
Like, oh my God.
And like, oh my God, what? Like I'm being seen or like I'm getting it.
Yeah. I'm like, she likes me. I'm like, okay. Or like, not just like, oh my God, she likes me, but like, oh, you know, like even just using the term honey, I kind of got this like energy in my body. Like, oh my God, that feels good.
Oh, like you're getting something you've been longing for, that just in this moment, like it's really going in.
Right. I'm probably letting my little one just like,
yes, oh, get it. Does she have room for like a little smidge more?
Oh, yeah.
Can you ask her? Yeah. And the defenses still get to be on the shelf for a moment? Okay. Just for a moment?
We can try it.
Yeah. Well, you tell me.
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. Yeah. I want to say to little girl you who's here with us, like, oh, my love, I love it when I get to see you. You are welcome here anytime. What's happening as I see you nodding?
Oh,
and your tears.
Good. Oh, really good. Feels really good.
Oh, wow.
Let's just do this forever.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Oh, I just feel so much delight listening to this moment, because out from underneath the defenses that we employ as adults. We get access in this moment to Patty's childlike longing to be delighted in, right? It's the part inside of all of us that we have that would, you know, take the drawing to mom and say, "Mom, look at this drawing that I made. Can we put this on the fridge?" The sense of knowing that we are wonderful and wanting someone to confirm that as they recognize our delightfulness in us. And so we're all on this journey of learning how to see ourselves as we are and learning how to take in the good and true things about us. But when we're doing that, we don't just jam it down our throats. I had a supervisor of mine say recently, it's kind of like feeding a baby in a way. You give them a little bit and you see how it lands and you see them chew it and how it swirls around their mouth and if they can ingest it and if they like it and if they're ready for more. You don't hook them up to a fire hose. So Patty and I have built up to this kind of work together, and it's a long way away from where we used to be, but still I'm wanting to make sure, is this too much for you or do you want more?
Feeling so grateful that we have this recorded, because it makes me think, wonder what it would be like for you to watch it or listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the parts of me saying what I said that really, really touched you on a deep level, how it would be to hear those things again, to let them sink in more.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I'm taking that in. These are such good things to say, because like we've been talking about today, we never want to have to guess about those things. So I have no conflict about taking in your affection. It just is like, there it is.
It feels exciting to me to know that the change and transformation, the healing and restoration that I see in front of me every single day, but is so private. It's like through this podcast, I get to say to listeners, like, do you want to know a secret? Do you want to know the kind of beautiful things that I get to see every single day when I see people show up and take risks and let me in and face their pain? Like, isn't this incredible? So I feel a sense of pride in the ability to say, this is what can happen when people do this kind of work. And maybe in a way offer hope to other people that this could be available to you too. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced and edited by Jody Martinson. Mixed and music by Lee Rosevere. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. Arif Nurani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.